Males are born. Men are built. This is the Great Man Podcast, where we want you to build great men as you allow other men to build you. Join New York Times best-selling author Stephen Mansfield, along with seasoned leaders of men, Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow, as we bring a wide range of experience and expertise to help you become the great man you are designed to be. With you this week are Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow.
Women. Can't live with them. Can't live without them.
I love how you just went right into it. You must have really considered this one.
Well, I haven't done that in a long time, man.
What, take a deep...
Yeah, the long sigh and grunt and all of it put together. This is an interesting subject today.
Yeah, expand. Why?
I mean, just women.
I'm just here. Now I'm here just to watch you get
great.
In trouble.
Women are great, man. Women are interesting, and it's just a big ball of confusion, man. But I did find something out the other day on the subject of women, man, that my wife is actually listening when I don't know she's listening. Because I said something, you know how we discussed, I don't know, 4 or 5 shows ago that we were going to commit to making the bed every morning and those kinds of things, start your day off.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that, you know, just for myself and meticulously. And I thought about it. And do you ever do this, JT? Like you say something to try to get a compliment from your wife? You ever do that?
I think everybody does that. Yeah.
So I look at my wife and I go, man, you're not going to even mention the fact that I've been making up the bed every morning. She goes, JT says he does it for himself. I'm like, great.
You listen to that one. Sorry. The one.
Yeah, you listen to that thing. So, okay, never mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us guys, maybe we don't set them up, or maybe we do, but I think all of us want compliments from the women that we love.
We do. We're constantly figuring out ways to draw one out of them. I mean, if you have one that's, you know, just free flowing and all that, that's awesome. But
why do you think that is? I mean, I have my thoughts.
To be confirmed, man. I think it's across the genders, man, that everybody likes to be confirmed in the things that they do well. And if you do something extra, you want somebody to notice and comment on it. And it's like training a puppy. You reinforce the things that you want. And, you know, if your puppy goes and sits down when you say sit, you give them a treat. And I think that everybody's like that. They want to be recognized for the things that they do well.
Are you saying women are like dogs?
I'm saying men.
That is how I took that. You beat me to the punch.
Edit all that out, and I want to start over. No.
Keeping all that.
No, I mean, I think that people are pretty basic.
What's your dog's name?
Augie.
So I can hear it in Anthony's house. Woman, sit. I meant Augie. I didn't mean you. I'm sorry.
That's hilarious for me.
Yeah,
that you would think that you could hear that in my house. Nah, man, but I think that it's in everybody's DNA, man, to want to be confirmed in the things that we do well and to want to be recognized. And it's one of the downfalls. It's one of those reasons to get bitter a lot of times when in these relationships, even at work or home and all this kind of stuff, when you feel like that people don't put the extra energy in to recognize something that you do and acknowledge it. And so, I mean, there
but
you go.
Could it be because it's a wrong motive?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, just because you brought it up, making the bed. I mean, honestly, I do that for myself. So there's no expectation.
Yeah, my wife told me that.
Yeah, she was correct.
Yes.
There's no expectation on my part that my wife would ever say every morning, thank you for making, it's not an expectation I have,
and
because that's not the reason I'm doing it.
And you're better than most of all of us.
Now, I am saying there are some things that I do hoping that I get at least some recognition.
Yeah. You know,
and we've talked about it before. I mean, men just have very few cheerleaders in their life.
Right.
I mean, when it comes to work or play, you know, that's why I think we like pick up basketball games or men play softball or pickleball or choose your sport because there's instant recognition from a team effort. Like if you notice a lot of team sports, I mean, they're slapping each other every time they do something good. If you do something bad, they tell you, but it's not like a dig on you. It's like, hey, don't do that again, because there's a common goal of we just want to win. And I want to look good in front of my dudes, you know?
I got to ask you this, though, because you brought it up. And I know that it's popular right now, but pickleball. Yeah. Have you ever played pickleball?
No.
No. Mm-mm. But you brought it up and you threw it in a conversation to stay relevant.
It's just relevant. I mean, you know, you get our age, you start looking at Facebook posts of your friends going, what is it about pickleball?
Look at my son. Look at my grandson. Look at my son-in-law. Oh, what are they doing?
So anyway, Stephen brought up a great topic, of course, about bitterness toward women. And, you know, basically he gave three reasons to just kind of summarize that we were made for women, meaning that we were made to be sensitive toward them because we're paired for a woman. You know, that's just a statement that men are paired for women. Take that however you want, but for what it's worth, in my line of work, there's always a female part and there's always a male part. Mm-hmm. And one receives and one penetrates or goes into, and that's what makes a connection. I mean, that's in wiring. That's in, you just name it. That's all a part of it. So naturally we are made to be paired or sensitive with a woman. And that's what makes it so difficult whenever we feel that we've been mistreated or abused emotionally, verbally, or abandoned, or, you know, whatever. It makes it harder, I think. And it's why the reason why our wives or other women in our life have the weight that they have connected to the words. Secondly,
I have a bone to pick with Stephen, and I often look for opportunities to have these bones because he's always right. But were we made for them or were they made for us?
Yes. So number two,
off. I don't want to touch that. Okay.
Secondly, it was an attack from a woman can be an attack. We perceive it as an attack on our manhood.
And oftentimes, you know, we were texting back and forth before this actually came out. And oftentimes I think that women have realized how impactful it is to attack that thing. Or like Stephen said, stick your finger in it. And I think that consciously or even subconsciously, when they want to rattle you, they know that they can attach that thing.
Yeah.
Something about your masculinity or something about your manhood.
It's almost as if, you know, a woman will, I used to hear this quite often when I was growing up about a woman hitting a man and about a man hitting a woman. It was commonplace, just so you know, for me to hear that if a woman hits a man, she just put herself in a man's place. Mm-hmm. Which I don't agree with, by the way. But my point in this is that women can push us physically. Like they can get in our face knowing probably we're not going to retaliate. And that's what you're saying is, man, they know how to push our buttons because we're between a rock and a hard place all of a sudden. It's like, yeah, you're coming at me, pushing my buttons and maybe even physically, you know, but I can't retaliate because if I retaliate, the law and everything around me says that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Emotionally to me that I can look at the same thing physically, emotionally, mentally. It's like, man, wonder if that is just a subconscious underlying thought process that women have.
Yeah.
I don't know, by the way, I'm just asking a question.
I think you do know, you know, a lot of times, man. And like I'm speaking even in this moment, man, like, I don't know that things are always intentional either. Like when you're in a heated state or having, what do they call it? The communion, exaggerated.
Intercourse? I don't know.
No. You know how Christian folk, when they call arguing, they say something communion, exaggerated communion. Anyway, I think a lot of times, man, when you hit on something and you see that it causes somebody to go catawonkers, get off balance, just subconsciously you go, ooh.
Yeah,
I'm going to hang on to that. And if I need something in a moment where I might perceive I'm losing this argument, or I'm losing space or losing whatever it is, I'm going to jug that in there. And so that's one of the things that I think that has become commonplace in relationships and in men and work, just in those exchanges, is that the possibility of a woman attacking that thing and we're super sensitive to it.
Yeah.
And it just happens. I'm not saying it's intentional or not.
Honestly, I don't think it is.
Yeah,
I don't
probably think, is not.
Yeah, I don't think this is a thought process. If, you know, A, B, C, D, E, if I do this, I get this, I get that, he'll respond this way. But I think it's all subconscious.
Do men, what's the woman's equivalent? If the men's equivalent is equivalent to sticking your finger in the wound and attacking our manhood and you're not good enough, what's the woman's equivalent? What do men strike on women?
It's a good question.
Too bad we don't have a woman.
I was gonna say, I'm honestly glad I don't know the answer to that.
Because you'd be sticking your finger. No. So in relational conversations and when you get in arguments, Stephen was talking about that one of the reasons why men have this animosity towards women is because women can say things that they feel like is an attack on their masculinity, on their manhood.
Like, you're not man enough.
And I was saying, a lot of times I don't think that that's actually intentional. I think it just happens one time and the guy flies off the handle and the woman goes, oh, that gets me, you know, some reaction. And I'm just curious if you know, or if you've run across a thing that just makes your wife or makes a woman in the same manner. And
I just had a thought. Maybe it's a silent treatment. Maybe that's what's equivalent, because they're conversationalist. For the most part, we know that women have 10 to 15,000 words a day. Men have about 5,000. So is that the equivalent of, well, I just won't say anything.
Yeah.
And that puts her in the same spot as she would you by saying more than is necessary, maybe.
Sure.
Thoughts?
I don't know.
Well, number three was most men. And this is the one that I agree with the most, is that I do believe most men are unsure of their own manhood.
Yeah.
I know that for me, I probably come across more confident than I am, because I question a lot of things inside of me all the time.
100%.
Do I have what it takes to do this job? Do I have what it takes to be a husband, be 100%. A father, and a lot of times it's reinforced. Again, not intentionally, that we're not.
That you're not adequate, that you don't get any wins, that you're constantly messing up.
And we talked about culture now says if men were more like women,
This world would be great.
And I think that's not accurate. Can we learn from each other? Absolutely. Can I not be harsh in my words, or can I not be, you know, and more subtle and more merciful and more gracious? Well, yeah, I mean...
But and can women be more what qualities would you
probably say? Assertive?
Assertive
and not aggressive, clearly, but assertive,
clearly communicating and not hoping that you perceive a thing from past, you know, conversations, or just to say what you mean, those kinds of things.
That's a good one.
But they're compliments of each other. And we were talking about this earlier, and I know we're gonna get into some of the meat of this, man. But you know, when I look at my wife and go, man, I just wouldn't handle it like that. Like, I'm constantly pissed off.
Yeah.
Because I'm expecting her as a woman to behave as me as a man. But, you know, I can be, you know, doing something pretty benign, like, I don't know, whatever. And my wife can call into question, hey, are you really going to do that? You know, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to do it? Of course I'm going to do it. Well, you know, you could, and she's like a safeguard almost, or, hey, what if, consider this, or things like that. And I can sit there, man, and really get angry about it, or I can just smile and go, thank you, God. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's my God that provided those qualities in my wife. But man, when we're constantly hoping that the other person behaves more like us, I think that's a place where we can build up a lot of this anger and angst and animosity towards the other.
Sure. And I do want to talk about the root of what Stephen was talking about, because I do think mothers have such an influence in our lives, good and bad, that if we don't pay attention to it, it's going to cause us to respond to women our entire life in some really unhealthy ways.
100%.
And some healthy ways. And we are, again, every person on the planet has great qualities and not so great qualities. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the way it is. But we need to look at the mother, and he brought up the word wound, and I do believe it is a mother wound.
Yeah.
And I would say this on the onset, that most mother wounds are done out of love and not out of anything else. There's not a underlying cause, you know, other than they love their kids so much. Now, it may come out, because I think that you, as an example, I think your mother loved you, although she abused you. And her demented way of thinking, her traumatized way of dealing with the things that she was dealt with in life, somehow it was twisted that she was doing you good because you were her son and she loved you, even though it came across as abuse.
Yeah, you know, and of course, when we're talking about women and anger and angst and relational kind of things, the first person that I'm always going to go back to is my mom, because the relationship wasn't perfect, man.
Right.
It was far from perfect. But I remember, man, growing up, just wondering, can I do anything right?
Yeah.
Like, because my mom was wound up for a lot of different reasons, man, and emotionally abusive and physically abusive and just all these kinds of ways abusive. And I was constantly walking around on eggshells. So I find growing up, man, that I think that a lot of this insecurity was built into me by my mom constantly questioning, why is this? And what are you doing with that? And how is this? And some of it was possibly the way that she was raised. And some of it was her anger towards my father being directed at me. But there's a whole gamut of opportunities for us to get offended and build these things into the way that we look at other women in our lives. But I do remember a redemption of that moment, JT. And it took a lot of years, man, probably 40 something years later. But I remember my mom simply looking at me and going, you know, Tony, you weren't a bad kid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I used to behave as though you were constantly doing something bad, because you weren't. You were a great kid, but I always gave you the impression that you were a bad kid. And that redeemed something in me, man. And everybody's not going to get that opportunity. But a lot of times I just want to throw it out there that when people behave this way in your young life, man, there's the opportunity for them to come around and understand it differently. And they may never come and tell you, but understand that they do probably realize that they've been very difficult or negative in a certain way. And I remember something else that really changed the direction of my life and my opinion about myself is when my mom looked at me and goes, what's wrong with you? Are you, and I don't remember if she said the R word or she said, are you crazy? But it just made me go, wow, am I? Mm-hmm. Because this is the most powerful opinion in your life at the time. And so that built another insecurity in me. Am I good enough? Am I mentally equipped? Am I all these different things compared to other people? Because my mom is obviously the smartest person in the world. And she sees something in me and she's questioning, what's wrong with you? Are you this?
Yeah.
And man, it really spent me a lot of years, man, just trying to recover from that.
Because we know that most wounds from women come from the wounds of a mother. We can project onto women how our mothers made us feel, or all women are going to be like this, like overbearing, like over talks all the time, you know, doesn't let me do anything, doesn't respect the boundaries that I put in place. You know, because as we get older, we have to put boundaries in place with our parents, especially if you get married. I mean, yeah, there's got to be some boundaries. And again, I know lots of mothers that they look at those boundaries like, that's just something to step over.
Yeah, that marriage doesn't mean anything to me. I'm still in my place of because authority.
I'm number one in my son's life. Mm-hmm. You know, they just have that. It's hard to let go. And we understand all this. We're not slamming mothers.
Right.
They may have the hardest job on the planet as being a mom and dealing with all the things that they bring into a marriage or into a motherhood that they have to deal with as well. It's not like they come ready to be a mother. I mean, they have all the insecurities, all the thoughts of, am I good enough? Am I going to be able to take care of this baby? Am I going to be able to provide? Am I going to keep a household that's conducive to a baby being here and growing up and becoming what I mean, I'm sure there's so many questions that run through their minds. So we're not bashing, but we do have to talk about the effects of a mother that is too influential in her son's life in a negative way.
Yeah. You know, and increasingly so, man, these mothers are also raising these children alone for any number of reasons, man. And especially in my community, the Black community, I think the most recent number is 70% may be raised in a home without a father.
Single mothers. Yeah.
So single mothers. And then, so you get this, like the situation I was talking about earlier, where the woman is speaking in a protective manner to keep you safe, to keep you listening to the different options and obstacles that you might come across. Whereas a father walks in and goes, let him do it. Mm-hmm. Let him do it. He won't do it again. And it's the same kind of love, but a different perspective, because the man knows that if you go out there and you get on that trampoline and you try to do the triple somersault and you hit your head, you won't do that again, or you'll learn something from it and how to be safe. And so they both have the same perspective, but they have different ways of getting there. And if you're only getting one side of it, say from a mom in a household, a lot of times if you're a boy, it's going to come across overbearing. It's going to come across stay safe and never take chances and never do anything that could harm you. And then you end up with this guy that's living this way. And the way that I say it to other men is they identify more closely with the feminine perspective than they do with the male perspective. And any guy that's identifying more closely to the female perspective, in my opinion, that's where that word comes in, overly feminized.
Yeah.
It's not that you're feminine, or it's not that you're gay, or it's not that you have some attraction to a male. It's that you identify more closely to the ideas and concerns and all the opportunities that a woman sees, because that's the majority of the perspective that you've got.
You know, it's almost as if safe has become the new priority in raising children. But actually, it's maturity should be the goal, because you, at some point, you want to come obsolete. So it's not, and yes, I'm not saying we don't keep our kids safe. Perfect example, my grandson was over at my house the other day, and he's crawling up the steps. And so, of course, my wife says, hey, you know, when he comes down, she kind of told me, hey, watch him, which, great, thanks for reminding me. But he started coming down, he kind of fell and kind of hit his head a little bit, and I picked him up, you know, so it's, and I had the thought of, it's okay to let him fail a little bit. Obviously, I don't want him to get hurt.
Injured, yeah.
But kind of the, what I wanted him to feel was the fear of falling a little bit, because my goal is not to keep him safe on the steps right at the moment. The ultimate goal is to teach him how to go down steps, so we don't have to watch him every time he's on steps.
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily keep him safe, right, but I want to train him how to go down safely.
Yeah, I don't.
On his own.
Yeah, we don't want, of course I don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah.
But again, that's the whole difference a little bit, because I think for the most part, again, this is not 100%, but most women look for safety and security as the number one goal, where men look at kind of, you know, push the boundaries. What are the boundaries? Teaching long term, this is how we do things. This is how I learned. One statement I remember my grandfather always saying was, he said, well, he'll never do that again.
Yeah.
And I heard, because I was a rambunctious boy, my gosh, I was into everything. And he would do things that he knew that I would probably get hurt. Again, not broken arms or broken legs or anything.
Give me the opportunity to learn.
He'd say, well, he'll never do that again. And I heard that so much in my life growing up.
Yeah.
That was just a part of it. But
Jonas, is that generational, man? You're in a whole different generation. Like, would you ever look at a child and go, what, let him go? Let him go. Because he's gonna do it at some point. I'd rather be here and be able to pick him up and let him learn the lesson rather than protect him in this moment.
You are asking this at a very poignant moment for me. Like yesterday, my one-year-old I set him down on the floor, and we have like two steps that go up to a different level of our house. And I turn my back for like not even 10 seconds. And I turn around and he's actively falling off the bottom step backwards, about to land on his back and head onto a very hard floor. And I reach out and grabbed him like the exact moment that he fell. And I was like, wow. Okay. So there's part of me that's like, I need to be there in case something really not good happens. Absolutely. Like that.
Yep.
But I also don't have a problem with letting a kid push themselves and learn lessons. I was having that conversation with my neighbor, because my next door neighbor, he has a 18-month-old, and she's outside in the backyard all the time, climbing over everything, jumping off the wall, just doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And he's nearby, but he's letting her learn.
Absolutely, man.
And he's like, he's talking exactly about what you guys are talking. He's like, she'll sit down on the ledge with her back facing the ledge, and I will let her fall, but I will catch her, but I'll let her feel the experience of falling.
Yeah.
So that she knows, okay, wait, I can't do that.
And I think that's the balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is allowing them to fall, but being there to catch them.
Yeah. Right. Love wants you to protect. Love is going to want to protect.
Absolutely.
But love as well wants you to know that there's danger out there.
Correct.
Because if I protect you from every opportunity, you're never going to understand that bad things can happen.
So, and that's where I feel like this topic really comes full circle, because I think that's where a lot of bitterness can come in how you were overprotected. That can be one form of that bitterness coming into your life.
Yeah.
And it's not only overprotective. What if your example, what if he wasn't in the backyard and his child got hurt all the time because his parent was absent?
Yeah.
So you have the same effects as overly protective as you do as absent. And it's just, which one did you grow up with? And maybe you grew up with a very balanced, and thank God for you. I mean, we need all of it. But the same effect is you can be overly protective or you can be absent. The thing that I want us to really key in on today, though, is this, because we're not throwing bombs at moms here. However, we do need to understand the effects that they've had in our life in a negative and positive way so that we can grow and mature and move past those things that we hold, as Stephen said, that we become bitter, resentful, and that we hold other women unfairly to a thought process of women that we're imprisoned to because of the way that we view our moms.
Yeah.
So we have to look at, number one, we have to look at our mom as this. Your mom, I'm talking to everybody that's listening, your mom has unhealed trauma that affected her view of herself as a woman, as a wife, as a mother, and that she's going to pass that on to her kids. And that's, you just have to understand that some of this is not her doing. Some, just like you have trauma passed on to you that you have to deal with, that's not your doing. What you're responsible for is not that it happened, but that how you dealt with it as you realize what it is and the effects it has on your life in a very negative way.
Yeah. And just to bring that down to like brass tacks or very practical, I've told you this before, JT, that when I was growing up and in the house with my mom, when there was a thunderstorm, my mom would make us all sit quietly in the house, turn off all the electrical things, because she felt like that if something electrical was on, there was an opportunity for the storm, the lightning to be more attracted to the house. And we were, you know, just in a state of like calm and reverence, and the house was quiet when there was a bad lightning storm going on. Now I'm from Texas, man. So a lightning storm can bring with it tornadoes and really bad straight line winds. You know, there's some bad things that can happen. But man, just like that thing was taught to her as a place of safety.
Yeah.
As something that would keep you safe. There's all kinds of like mother's tales or wives' tales, man, they get told to children, and people tag on and believe in certain ones of them. And then when they pass those on to you, they're trying to love you.
Yes.
They're trying to give you some information to keep you safe in this opportunity. And you hear it and you go, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
And that in itself can cause us to have this angst or this resentment towards women, or not trust their thought process, until we understand that there's a wide gamut of opportunity for people to learn and grow and progress and get to a place in their life where they may have different opinions, man. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that a lot of times, man, we get information that they've been taught as the gospel, as true.
Yeah.
And they've never been able to work through it. So they want to make sure that they pass it on to you. It's just like when Jesus left and he looked at the people and he said, go and spread the word, you know, go and attend to my people. It's those last parting instructions that, hey, I'm out the door, but I want you to get this. And a lot of times they're just trying to impart those things. But if we receive them and get pissed off about them without understanding the context of them, a lot of times it does cause us to be angry and overly zealous about our parents.
Yeah. And as men, we need to realize that we can't, the thing that you don't do is minimize the effects of your upbringing from your mother, meaning that, you know, I think for a long period of time, just to make it personal, I could say, yeah, but my mom had it rough when she was growing up too.
Sure.
So I would make an excuse for her behavior, and that allowed me not to deal with the emotional trauma or the effects that it had in my life, because I would minimize So it's okay to say, man, my mother had a rough upbringing, or she had trauma, or she came from a divorce home, or she was beat, or she was sexually assaulted, or she, we can say all those things and they're facts, but it doesn't take away the necessity to deal with the effects that those things have had in our lives.
How about this one, man? We've talked a little bit about mothers and the impact and how it affects us. But what about those situations where there is actually a toxic woman in our lives that affects our lives, that causes trauma and drama in our lives? And how do we, you know, respond to that? And we have to validate the fact, JT and Stephen even said it too, that yes, there is a segment of the female population that have gotten on this bandwagon as to, you used to be a player. Well, I'm a player now. You use what you have to get what you want. Well, I'm going to use what I have. You know, I'm going to take you to court and lie on you to get what I need out of you and cause you to have to pay me and destroy your own life. Like we can point to thousands of those situations, and it's true. It's not across the board 100% that all women behave like that. But what about these guys that have been impacted by a woman in their lives, and she, you know, was with you, and then she found somebody that made $5,000 more a month than you do, and she decided to go with him. Like, how do we address those guys that have these real live opportunities and things that they need to get over because they've been obviously harmed? You know, how do we address that?
Boy, this is not going to be the answer you were thinking. And it could be a little controversial, but that's fine. Because, you know, one thing that we're going to do, and I love this about you and myself and Stephen, that we just decided there's just going to be no BS. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an authentic thoughts, right or wrong, indifferent, whether you agree or not. You know, I'm so tired of living behind trying to figure out what people want to hear and say in those things.
Sure.
So it's going to be just a no BS, you know. So here it is. Why would you pick a woman like that in the first place?
But I did. Then what?
Why?
I don't know. I'm broken. I made a bad choice.
Does it go back to, though, this whole mother wound that we've been discussing?
Yeah.
Is that your example of a woman? Did you take that and either go, it's like when we grow up as fathers, we say, I'm not going to be like my father in this way. And we don't, like, we do the opposite because women
can
affect.
Women can hide certain facets of theirs. Themselves, just like he was talking about the websites that, you know, how to score a pro ball player, how to bet a pro ball player, how to get you a pro ball player to pay your bills. You know, all these websites and all these opportunities and education and these gurus are out there trying to teach and pour and start a church.
I'm gonna just say basically. I'm gonna say this too. What kind of woman would do that?
Yeah.
Maybe possibly one of the reasons why is because she didn't have a father to teach her the things that are necessary in order to be an upright citizen of moral character with integrity. And you don't do that. So I'm saying so many things as men go back to our mothers, so many things as women go back to our fathers. I mean, again, together, that's, we want the family unit. That's the best. But I'm saying, why would you choose women like that? And why would a woman want either choose a man that abuses her? Why would you do that? Because maybe it feels like home.
Now, I know that you've dealt with a lot of couples going through divorce, man. And let's talk about that. You know, this couple's been together and they've been loving and compassionate and everything's going well. And something happens with one cheats or something like that.
That's that statement that you just said is never true.
What? Been loving and compassionate.
Yeah. The whole time. Like, well, fairy tale.
Man, there's some couples, man, that do well.
Fairy tale.
But anyway, you know, and then you get to this place where you decide that divorce is your only option. And then you get into court or get into some legal situation. And this person breathes all of this fairy tale of how bad you are and the things that you've done, and you both know it to be true. Man, those kinds of things, man, one of the greatest, I guess, disappointments in my life is to have pure motives in a situation, but to have negative motives assigned to it. Like, I've walked into this situation to do something great, and somebody doesn't like what I do, and they assign some negative motive to it. So you end up in court, and it's clear, and you may even joke back and forth with the person that's taking you to court about the fact that they know it's not true, but they do it because they know that they're going to be believed in court. Like, these moments happen, and ultimately, when we get offended in that moment, we have to decide that we're going to go get healed rather than respond in likeness.
Yeah.
But you know, those, we have to admit, JT, man, that those things happen, man. They happen.
Listen, we just talked, or my wife actually just talked to a woman a couple of weeks ago that they went through divorce, and now she's kind of regretting going through divorce and going through some of the things. And
why is she regretting it?
Because in the midst of, again, this is just a personal opinion.
Yeah.
In the midst of chaos, in the midst of pain, in the midst of hurt, in the midst of things could be better, you start believing a narrative that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning that for the most part, divorce is not the easiest path. It's actually the hardest
path. Yeah.
But you can't tell somebody that because all they want is relief. So, and they're not concerned about that. Well, they are concerned about long-term. They just feel like this long-term solution is best. But she came back and told my wife that she regrets it. And that a lot of the things, to your point, a lot of the things that the attorney said, even about her husband, she knew wasn't true, but he said, we have to say this
to get what we need,
to get what we need.
Yeah,
for sure. So it's definitely there.
And it's very,
and that's on both sides,
yeah.
But it does favor women in their court system.
And
unfairly,
it's
for sure.
And it's unfortunate when you live out that situation in real time and you go, we all know anyone that was connected to this household, this marriage, my children, we all know that that particular thing is a lie. And I know that it's being said in court to get what we need. But once we get past that, ultimately, in all of this, you know, and having resentment and anger and distrust and all this, I have plenty of moments growing up with my mom. I've mentioned this before, like waking up and seeing my mom go through my stepdad's pants. And it made me go, what is she looking for in his pants while he's asleep? You know, she must think there's something in there. And it made me say to myself that all women are prone to do something like this. And I don't know what percentage are, but I'm gonna stretch and say it's very low.
Yeah.
It was something that my mom felt like she needed to do. But it gives me an impression of women that's not fair, and then I'm working off of that.
Yeah.
It gives me an impression of a woman when I see her and how she relates to my stepfather, as she's overbearing, only her side matters, whatever he has to say, all these kinds of things. So when I perceive that in the woman that I'm pursuing, it hits differently.
Mm-hmm.
It hits differently with me. And so we have to be able to recognize those things. And Stephen was very careful to keep saying this. We need to get healed.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we need to realize that some things are never going to have justice in our lives. We just have to forgive. And me and producer Jay were talking about a situation in his life, man, that at some point you're going to have to just throw your hands up and go, I'm never going to get what I want out of this situation. I'm going to forgive it because it's going to be for me and give me relief in this situation rather than the other person. So healing and forgiving are just huge parts of what we need to be talking about.
And a part of the healing, because I can't let this go.
Yeah.
Because I've hid behind forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that mean?
Yeah.
Is that I came to the point I forgive, but I never dealt with the emotional consequences
that it had on you.
Yes. You have to do both because, you know, it is easy to say, I forgive.
Yeah. And it's important.
It's important, but you got to take the next step.
Absolutely.
And deal with the emotional consequences and how they affected you and continues to affect you in your life. So I want to go over this list because we're going to land this plane, but I do want guys to think about this. And again, we're not talking to predominantly women in this podcast. We're definitely talking to men. So
yeah,
this is a list for men, but I do want you to think about the first woman of influence in your life was your mother, of course, and how she treated you, what she taught you has an effect on you right now. Good and bad. Our mothers teach us a lot of great things, but there are also those things that tag along that are not so great at times.
But what if they had that great mom that did everything right? Even that can create a wound in your heart in regards to other women because you're hoping that these women will match up to the expertise and the ability that your mom had to attend to all these things. And you start looking for another mother in the woman that you're dating.
Yeah, that's when you say, well, my mother did it this way.
And my mother cooked like this. And my mother, yeah, don't work. Don't work well.
Don't say that. Mm-mm. Do not say that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. Again, this goes, it's not just, you know, harmful, woundful things. Yeah. It's actually great mothers that do things that set their sons up for, you know, but maybe hopefully he picks a woman that's close to the way that his mother treated him.
Even though there's only three in the world.
Even though there's only, good luck finding her. But just think of your mom for a minute and just, you know, if you're driving, don't close your eyes, but just think of your mom. I'm going to just list about three or four things and just, was she like this? Was she overly protective or not protective enough? Was she overly merciful? Meaning that did she give in too much and not let you pay a consequence for something? Or was she harsh about consequences? I know many stories where kids honestly were put in a closet because of misbehavior. I mean, that's harsh to separate a kid and put them in a dark closet. That's to the extreme. Was she present or was she absent? Either by maybe even she passed away and she wasn't able to be there, but the fact of the matter is you didn't have a mother growing up because she was absent. And maybe she was the aggressor, the protector, because your father wasn't there. Or maybe, as we say, she wore the pants in the house, even though she was married. So was she the aggressor, the protector, or was she just a doormat and a victim? I mean, all these things have effects on our lives that we just have to look at and look and say, how did those things, no matter how I answered the question or however I think about my mother, how have those things affected me in my life? Because that's where it starts, of you healing, because you can't keep making other women pay for the sins of one. Mm. You have to go, okay, if my mother did this, then I'm looking for a woman who doesn't do that. If my mother did this and I'm looking for a woman who did do that, because that was awesome. That was great. I mean, she
and you have to be honest in the moment to get out of things that when you get those red flags, like they're for real. Yeah.
Listen, thank you for saying that. Cause it's okay. Listen, it's okay that your mom didn't do 100% great job. It's not a slam. I used to think this, by the way, that I couldn't say much against my mom.
Yeah.
Because it's just taboo. I mean, you just didn't do that no matter what. And it's like, no, it's okay for me to say she loved me, but.
Yeah.
And it's a big but.
Absolutely.
It's a big Kardashian just implanted.
Yeah.
But
yeah. They're there.
This happened.
You have to be honest with
me. And I have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important because no matter what you thought, like when I said those words, which part of the pendulum your mom was on, those do have effects. And here's some of the effects. Just think about this. It's the inability for you to set boundaries with others. It's an insecurity that you have with yourself about your physical appearance. It's creates a, are you codependent on others that you just can't do certain things because you have to have another person with you when you do it. You're codependent. It has an effect on how you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
Really, how do I feel about myself? That's an honest question. How do I feel about, do I feel less than? Do I feel overly confident? Do I feel, you know, like this one particular thing I do really well, and that's where I just lean to all the time because that's where I get my praise, and everything else I'm just kind of just not good in, so I don't really try hard. You know, maybe that's an effect of a wound, right? You don't trust yourself. So when you don't trust yourself because you were told not to trust yourself.
Yeah. Or you weren't worthy of having the common sense to trust.
So what's that? What that does is it makes you seek out approval from others.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't possibly trust what you think about yourself. And even when you have that mentality, even when somebody else says that you're doing good in this area, you halfway believe them and don't believe them. You don't believe them fully. Because you just can't believe that about yourself.
Yeah, and I deal with that very strongly now. And I've mentioned this to you plenty of times before, JT. But, you know, in the Bible where God looks down on his son at Jesus and goes, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. You know, listen to him. Implying he's got something to say and it's very important.
We need
He confirmed that in his son. And having never gotten that from my father, you know, I was always wondering, am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? Am I behaving the right way? And then having my mom tell me, are you stupid? You know, things like that. So it builds this insecurity in us, man. And the moment that somebody rubs up against that wound, mm-hmm. that implies maybe you don't understand or maybe you don't get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can cause us to behave and act out in a way that's just not proper, man.
That's right.
And that's the whole idea about identifying these things and getting healed from these things.
Another effect of it is, man, you're just not just angry, but it's almost like rage over a lot of things, mm-hmm. and really minuscule, small things, not yeah. big things, just minuscule, just she did something and you just blow off the handle. You know, it's just,
absolutely.
It's like the reaction doesn't fit the crime. Absolutely. So to speak. Bitterness. We've been talking about bitterness, which is Stephen alluded to this, which is a poison. So bitterness is you're drinking a poison, hoping that the other person is affected.
They get sick.
Yeah. No, yeah. They don't really get sick. Mm-mm. You get sick. You don't have a deep connection with women. You can look at your life and go, man, I've never really had a deep connection with a woman, or I'm overly connected. And that's where the codependency comes in. Like I don't have a connection, or I can't live without a woman.
I can't deal with the fact that I've done something that's caused a rift between me and this woman. I have to fix it immediately.
Yeah.
I have to attend to it immediately. We have to discuss it immediately rather than giving it space and opportunity to be able to be discussed at the proper time.
Yeah.
It's just like an emergency. It's got to be fixed right now. And that's another consequence of the way that we're raised.
Which goes to that relational failure that you have with women. And mm-hmm. and I'm not just talking relationship, like love relationship. I mean, work relationship, friendship. I mean, it just affects every area of your life when it comes to a relationship with a woman.
Yeah.
And again, lastly, but this is just what I had written down. This is not lastly, but lastly for us is, you know, you feel shame around the way that you were raised. Mm. Right. And it causes you to either cower down or just not talk about it a whole lot or act like you have dealt with it. So you can lie to other people and say, yeah, I've dealt with that. You know, my mom or my dad was this. Well, yeah, I'm over that. But the effects of it tell a different story. So those are the kind of things that we have to look and go, you know, am I being affected? Now, what we do, and what I don't want you to do is run from those things. Instead, I want you to walk through them, because there's something about, so you can run from, and it's always going to chase you, or you can stop, turn around and walk through, which means it's going to take some time, but you're not going to stop. Whether it's a casual stroll or whether it's a fast walk or whether it's a good pace, but you have to walk through the emotional effects of how they've impacted your life, these wounds that we've been talking about.
Yeah, because the typical immature, like, answer to having been harmed, having perceived someone done you wrong, having gone through a divorce and someone lied on you, having been in a relationship and somebody chose money over love or more money over the amount of money, having gone through those situations, the typical bitterness that arises, man, is very immature.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is, you know what? This happened to me, so I'm never going to let it happen to me again. And the way that I'm going to protect myself from it never happening to me again is I'm going to swear off women.
Yeah.
I'm going to mark them out of my life. I'm going to take care of my sexual needs myself. I'm going to build me a harem of women in my mind, and I'm going to watch porn. And whenever I get, you know, to a place where I can't take it, I'm going to relieve myself, and I'm not going to deal with them at all. And I'm going to pursue my business and pursue my craft and pursue my money and pursue all these other areas in my life. I'm going to let this area in my life just die out, because I'm not willing to put myself in a place where I could get harmed again. And it cuts you off. And to go back to what you said, you know, being built for a woman, being made for a woman, or a woman being made for us. When we do that, man, we cut ourselves off from half of the things that God had provided for us.
Back to what you just said, that we'll cut off a woman or we won't engage with a woman because we don't want to get hurt again. The flip side of it is, because again, the enemy does not play fair. Remember I told you one time, I said the enemy is a loser, but he never quits.
Absolutely.
I mean,
he's relentless.
Just relentless.
Yeah.
Because the flip side of it is, I don't need a woman because I'm so broken that I don't want to bring something into them that I can't, like, I'm just too broken of a man, and I'm just going to not deal with women because I'm not good enough for her. I'm just too broken. I'm just not. Honestly, that's the thought that I've had more than the other thought.
Yeah.
Even with my own wife, I've been married 32 years, and sometimes I just look and go, I'm not worthy to be married to her.
In fact, I'm going to agree with that.
I mean, on a deep level, not on a dig level. But, you know, it's like, you know, maybe I am too broken. Maybe I just my upbringing, just the things that I've done, maybe it is that there's just no hope.
You know, on that, and I hate to interrupt you, but I want to give your wife some props. So we're chatting before you showed up today. And I'm like, I'm sure it's going to end up with, you know, getting into mother wounds and all this. And she goes, my job as a wife and a mom in my household is to not create mother wounds. Is to be conscious of what I'm doing and saying and how I'm behaving. And I just want to encourage her and encourage all women that listen to the podcast that mindset, man, is a good place to start. Not that it's going to stop you from creating those wounds, but to realize that the possibility is there for you to create
them. Yeah, it will stop you from creating as much as you possibly can because you can create some.
Yeah.
As a woman, you have that kind of a power and authority. So, again, trying to land this plane, but there are some questions that I want you to ask. If I just went through those effects, you know, how's it affected me? Here's the start of dealing with the bitterness and resentment, getting over that, forgiving, moving on, dealing with the emotional consequences of those things, because the women in your life deserve you to be the best man that you can be. They need you in that. So here's some questions that you can ask yourself. Honestly, what kind of mom did you have? Just contemplate it, meditate on it, and write it out, good and bad.
Honest assessment.
Honest. Nobody's looking at this, but you're just honest.
What'd you love? What'd you not love?
2, how did her way of mothering affect you positively or negatively?
That's good.
How did her way of mothering you or your siblings affect you in a positive way or negatively?
And it doesn't have to be fair or correct. It's what your opinion of it is.
That's correct. Nobody's writing a book and publishing it. Okay. 3, what was her relationship with her parents and her siblings? What was that like?
Why is that important?
Because then that gives you insight on the trauma that maybe she dealt with.
So it will help with a measure of grace.
With the unhealed trauma. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Here's a good one. What response would you expect if you told your mom no? Now, this is as an older man, meaning your 20s, 30s, 40s, not as when you're living in her house. That might mean a slap across in my house. That would have been bad. But as you've grown older, what response would you expect if you told your mom no? Let me give you an example. I'm married now. I need you to come over Thanksgiving. No, we're going over to her parents for Thanksgiving. That has got potential to be a firestorm. So, but how would your, because this is going to give you some insight on what you think about your mother and the areas that she's maybe wounded you or actually lay some great groundwork for you to be a mature man.
And just on that note, and are you still stuck at 8 years old telling your mom no and afraid to even breach that situation now? Because it's going to come time, man, that you have to say no. And are you stuck back there with the reaction that you got back then?
Yeah, because saying no to her is saying yes to your wife. So saying yes to your mother is saying no to your wife, which that's not good. So, and lastly, do you understand her shortcomings without minimizing the effects and consequences that it's had on your life? And what are those consequences? Now, gentlemen, I just gave you a list of things that you can sit and meditate, contemplate, because you need to understand how the first woman in your life has influenced you in the good and in the bad, because it is the way that you treat women today. if you don't trust women, if you abuse women, if you just sleep around with every woman that you can, there is a reason why that you do that. You need to find the reason. You need to deal with the reason. You need to excavate the reason. And you need to build a better foundation of maturity as a man, because that is one of the arts of being a great man.
To join the Great Man community or to book Stephen, Anthony, or JT to speak at your man's event, go to greatman.tv. There, you'll also find incredible resources to help you become the great man you are made to be. The Great Man Podcast is a Wise Company production.